number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quicken Loans studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. You know what they say.
You know what they say. See a broad to get that booty act. Leg it down. Smack them. Yeah.
Nighttime is the right time. It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
We die together.
And YahooSportsRadio.com.
Tony D with you.
Getting interactive, recapping everything that's going down.
And giving you your first chance to react. Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Yahoo Sports Radio.
Is now.
Oh, got to be.
This is what we do.
From the Quicken Loans Studios, here's Tony D.
Tony D here on Yahoo Sports Radio. Thanks for joining us as we take you through the night tonight. We'll get more into the Missouri thing. Well, hopefully tomorrow we can get somebody on from the Missouri area that covers this and help us break it down. I want to bring you things that are really fascinating and have larger implications than X's and O's. I think this has much more implications than X's and O's. I think this is a big enough story, especially with athletes and the power that they have. When you just think about what could happen down the line. Once athletes realize, oh, wait a minute, this strike thing works. I could get some serious stuff. You know, a couple of years ago, a friend of mine asked me, I want to say this was years and years ago. I think it was when I was more or less in Vegas in my early 20s, mid to late 20s. You know, are we ever going to see student athletes ever get paid? At the time, I was thinking, nah, I couldn't see back in the late 90s where student athletes would get paid. I kept thinking, yeah, I mean, people have been talking about paying them forever. I just don't see a system where you could do that. So many athletes and whatnot. And now, not only do I think that we're going to see, I mean, not stipends. I mean, not what we're getting now. Now I'm talking about real like paychecks. I think it's coming. I think it's coming sooner than we think. Somewhere the egg is going to crack. And when it does, it's good. And this might be this little Missouri thing. In terms of the protests and how it's handled by the student athletes, because they're going to shut down the football program over this. This is powerful. It's a powerful statement by the Missouri athletes. And again, reports are that they're not all unified, but they're unified enough to have Gary Pinkle go. But if they realize the power of this, they can start demanding some things and using that to change college athletics. 800-777-2907. I think the cause of what they're doing is extremely important. I still need a little bit more information. And I'm glad, Dennis, you sent me an article on Twitter about what this President Wolf, who was trying to talk to a group and then drove away in a car, and he realized at the time that it made it look like he didn't care. And I think Tim's point in the last hour was well taken, which is when you feel like no one is listening to you, it gives you more reason to say change has got to come. We wanted to hear you say something. You didn't take us seriously. This is an issue that affects us and affects us greatly. If there's racism on campus, we want it addressed because this is, you know, where we live, this is where we go to school, and to have this cloud that's hanging over this culture. Maybe we can't stop people from thinking of it, but we need a university that is behind us. And maybe that's the overall message here. If it is, great. I still don't want a kid to die over it. I really, really don't want Mr. Butler to starve himself to death over it. And I hope he eats something. I hope he eats something and fights in another way. So I think that would be important. We were also talking about week 9 in the National Football League and some big wins today. I think the Colts got a very, very big win today over the Denver Broncos. I think the Colts needed this game. It wasn't a must win. I told you the story earlier about kind of the Facebook dialogue that I was having with a friend of mine who said that the Broncos don't need this game, but the Colts need this game. I understood where he's coming from. It just seems like it's a little tight in the AFC South, and it seems like there is no separation going on in the AFC South, and the Colts shouldn't be swimming in the same cesspool as the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Tennessee Titans and even so much the Houston Texans, but they are. But I think this is the kind of win the Colts really needed. Some turnover in the coaching staff, getting rid of Pep Hamilton, a team that doesn't look like it's found its way, a quarterback that has made too many mistakes, found his way to come together, found a way to sort of blend it together. I thought this was a very big win. The Broncos, don't read anything into the Broncos' loss here. Only in the narrative that changes every single week. We are very, very doom and gloom. That's how we're oriented as fans. Things are always worse than that they really appear to be. And the Broncos and the, well, that we now have this problem again and this. Wait till we get to the end of the season to see exactly the kind of football team the Denver Broncos are going to be. They're not going to win every game, and they're going to lose some games where they look terrible, like today, where they look bad at times. I mean, they were down 17-0. The defense admitted afterwards that they played a very lousy game. But I don't think it says anything that is permanent about the way the Denver Broncos are right now. Just like the Patriots. I don't think the Patriots are going 16-0. I think they're going to lose a game here or there. I think injuries are starting to pile up on them enough that they'll cost them a game. May not cost them many games, but it might cost them a game where a team plays out of its mind and beats them. And I still don't think you take anything out of that. Just like, you know, I don't think you take anything out of this Broncos team. The offense, though, played so well against Green Bay, I thought it needed another kick. It didn't get that kick. Dallas, we said earlier tonight, that was a tough, tough loss again. Falling too far behind now. At 2-6, where the Giants are 5-4 in the division, 2-6, you're definitely not out. It's not that. Time is clicking too much. It's ticking away too much. A couple of wins without Romo would have really straightened some stuff out and helped sort of paint a better picture in that division. And now, I don't know how much saving Tony Romo gives the Dallas Cowboys when he does come back. Look at the situation. He may be back for the November 22nd game against the Dolphins. He may. It's the first game he's eligible to come back. So they're trying to get him back at least for that game. At Tampa Bay. Look, the Bucs are not a team that is a pushover, but that's a winnable game for Dallas. But I can't say that because none of these games are winnable without Tony Romo at quarterback. Again, Matt Castle's day wasn't spectacular, but it wasn't downright horrible. There were some bright spots. There were some times where he looked good. There were some times where he lucked out. The throw to Dez Bryant was a Hail Mary, for crying out loud. Just throw it in there and see what happens. But even with Romo back, they've got to go to Lambeau Field. They've got to play a Jets team, a Bills team that's tough. Look, the Redskins twice, it's a division game. Is that really going to be a guaranteed win? When you're trying to make up three games right now on the Giants, you better hope Eli and the Giants take a nosedive. Because right now, the Cowboys' schedule doesn't really lend itself to easy wins down the stretch. They'll have 7 games left in the season if Romo does come back for the 22nd. 7. There is time to make up, but it's kind of reminds me of baseball. Even though you know a team is not mathematically eliminated, you just know that the task is too daunting. If they have to, they're down 8 games with 20 to go. It's just a little inconceivable to believe that they'll be able to make that up. Sure, the math works. Sure, they're not out of it. Sure, it's, you can totally come up with a scenario in which they make it up. But you just know through experience and the way you know baseball games are that is really too daunting to ask to make up 8 games in 20. Same here. They may be down 3 with 7 to go, let's say, if both teams win next week. But that's still a very, very difficult task, especially with the schedule that Dallas has with games against the Panthers and the Packers, and as I earlier said, Jets, Bills, and even the Redskins twice. I think just to have gotten a win today would have really changed the outlook. It would have gotten a monkey off this team's back. You got to win without Romo. You've got to win without the starter. Said it at the beginning, when Romo was out, just stay afloat. You don't have to do anything special even. But there are winnable games here, just stay afloat. Well, there weren't.
They have to go 7-1 at the minimum to make the playoffs, in my opinion.
I think that's not going to happen.
No, I mean, like you said, you'd have to beat Carolina or Green Bay. If you lose to the other one, then you have to win out. And that includes beating a decent Jets team, you know, Buffalo, who's a good team.
And the Redskins, which a team that will give you a pain.
Yes.
They will be a pain. You might beat them twice, but you'll sweat. You know you will. Doesn't matter. You just know you'll sweat out those division games. It's the way it always is. So it's tough. I said earlier tonight, look, I'm not a Cowboys fan, but I have a sympathy for them in this. I just really do. I all year long thinking about what this team could have been, to see just what these injuries have let them become. And it's heartbreaking for them to lose these games like this time and time again. I can't imagine being a true diehard fan and putting up with this. I don't think it's unreasonable for a Cowboy fan to demand that Jason Garrett and that coaching staff find a way to put players in positions to win games without Tony Romo. This cannot collapse completely without Tony Romo. And you know what? I got to be honest with you. Watching this makes me respect the 2008 New England Patriots even more, or the 2007 New England. What was it? 2008.
Eight.
When they lost Brady in the first game of the season, they did not make the playoffs, but the season wasn't destroyed. They didn't lose. I mean, what they? I think they went 10-6 and missed the playoffs.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I think they went 10-6. Yeah,
right. They didn't go, oh my God, we're 1-15. Look at us. It's like, you know, remember the year the Colts lost Peyton Manning and they went like 2-14 and had the number one pick for Andrew Luck. I remember thinking to myself, you got to be kidding me. You've got to be kidding me. Like, it fell apart that quickly?
They actually went 11-5 that year.
Oh, Patriots went 11-5, even better.
And missed the playoffs.
Even better.
Dolphins were 11-5, and they had the tiebreaker. The Steelers went 12-4. The Ravens went 11-5, had the tiebreaker.
Even better. Well, like, when the Colts lost Peyton Manning, of course you're not going to have a 12-4 season when you lose Peyton Manning. Of course not. But I couldn't believe that it looked like none of them knew how to play football. The loss of one guy, they couldn't play football. And sure, they had Kerry Collins for playing quarterback for a bit. But still, the Cowboys are not getting blown out of games. They've only gotten blown out of one game during this stretch, and that was against the Patriots. And you know what? Every teams are all going to do that. They had 14-point leads three times against the Atlanta Falcons. They should have won that game down in New Orleans. The Giants game was tight. The Seattle game was even tighter by 1 point. The Eagles game was an overtime loss, and they had some chances. Five of the six games were right there. That, to me, is just a coaching to a play, one or two things that could have gone right. This is not a team that is being beaten down because they're missing Tony Romo. They're a team that is just missing the one or two things without him, but find a way to get one or two wins out of this stretch. It's amazing to me. It is amazing that they can't find one. 800-777-2907. All right, coming up, we'll get into the college football, what happened on Saturday and how it's going to shake this college football playoff up. That's next on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, we'll get to the college football weekend in a moment, and we'll get into more details tomorrow as well, because we usually give our college football recap on our Tuesday morning show, as we spend a lot of time on the NFL. The Ben Roethlisberger could be out 1 to 2 weeks. That stinks for the Steelers, because, again, they just got him back, and now he's gone again. Yikes. Let's see here. What other piece of news in the injury front? Teddy Bridgewater had that concussion. But they went nuts on that. Zimmer went crazy on that hit. But when you look at it in full speed, it doesn't look like it was intentional. It looks like a guy, the Rams player, kind of hit him as he was they made contact just as he was going into the slide.
Like Jeff Visser said, this play happens a lot, and it was very unfortunate that he hit his head and was knocked out. But, I mean, he's kind of right. This play does happen a lot. It just needs to be, in my opinion, because it is a very dangerous play, because you hit that head's hitting the turf instantly.
Do you know why it seems more ominous? Because Greg Williams runs the defense with the Rams. Well,
and
so whenever Greg Williams' defense is involved in something like that, you go, oh, I can take a shot at this.
Yeah,
this is free.
I think the game was on Fox, and Fox did know, they went right to Greg Williams. They showed him instantly.
Did they really?
Yes. Yeah.
Good. Of course they did. I can only imagine the people in the truck. Get a shot at Greg Williams.
Quick.
This is quick. What do we got? Cameras on Greg Williams. Did you see him? Yeah, right there. Get it. Now put that up on. Yep. There you go. Camera three. Go. Greg Williams. That's easy. That's an easy target. That's free. You can. You can call cheap shot and not even have to answer for calling it when Greg Williams' defense is involved. It is a cheap shot. But LaMarcus Joyner, who made the hit, came out and went saying, listen, I knew this kid. There's no way I did this. It's like I have like total respect for him. It was just one of those plays. He said, quote, I know that guy. I grew up across the railroad tracks from him. My mom knows his mom. My dad knows his mom. I would never intentionally do a dirty play like that on Teddy Bridgewater. It was a bam bam play. He's a taller, statured guy compared to me. I did not know he was fixing the slide. When I launched, he slid and we connected. If I could take it back personally, I would take it back because I'm not a dirty player. I wouldn't want to take the joy from his mom or his team. So was it intentional? Not at all. I can't fix the problem with what's going on and how they feel, but how I feel inside is not good. You know, that's good to be public. I got the NFL's still gonna fine you. But it's cool to at least publicly state. Whether let people make their own mind whether they believe you or not, but at least you come out and you make this statement.
I have to ask you, what did you think of Aqib Talib's eye poke?
Oh, my God. First of all, on the one hand, I'd love to be outraged and offended that he would do that like in a major game like that. Because I pull for the Broncos, and I want to be like angry. But on the other hand, it just was like, it was so Three Stooges. It was but at the same time, you go, golly, really? You gave up? Like, you're costing your team a shot to win this game. My daughter was very upset in this game. She's a huge Broncos fan. My daughter's watching. She's very upset. She really wanted to beat the Colts because my brother lives in Indianapolis, and he was at the game, and she really wanted the Broncos to win. And I said, hey, if they hold the Colts to a field goal, Peyton Manning's got a shot to win it. It'll only be a 6-point game. So she was really excited about the opportunity. So she was really pulling for field goal. And then that happened. And then that was it.
Yeah, I liked how he was yelling at the referee after he did it.
Right.
Who threw the flag on him. Like,
it's like you can yell at me for a number of things. This isn't one of them.
Yeah.
I wouldn't use my free yell at the referee card on this one. Poke someone's eye. Boop. Poop. Nice going, Talib. You think he gets suspended? Yes or no?
Yes.
Yeah, I do too.
One game.
I do too. One game. I think so too. A lot of guys in the press box said the exact same thing. They said this one's going to be a suspension. Tony D, Yahoo Sports Radio. We'll talk college football next.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Pete Futek, collegefootballnews.com, had a really good point in his column about the weekend that was in college football. His overall point is this. When it comes to voting and polls and what the committee needs to look at, we put a lot of emphasis on what have we seen so far. Meaning, who are the unbeatens? How well have they looked? Who are the one losses? How well do they look? And we need to grade accordingly. But the reality is that if you're looking for the truly better teams, meaning Team A versus Team B, and then Team B versus Team C, and then Team C versus Team D, and you just say, I'm looking at the eye test, that I'm just saying, I just know that team is better than that team. The way that team plays, and I know, and I see the way this team plays, I think it's a no-brainer. This team may have one loss, but they're still better than this undefeated team. Using that criteria, if the committee was truly honest on Tuesday, the number one team in the country is Alabama. Now, they're not going to be the number one team. Clemson is going to be the number one team. But that Alabama and the way they took apart LSU and the way they got to Leonard Fournette is playing the best football right now in the country. Now, I agree with him in that sense. I do agree. Watching Saturday was telling for a lot of reasons. One, because when this Alabama team started to come together, I kept wondering to myself how much the Ole Miss loss was going to hurt them, because the Ole Miss loss, you cannot stress this enough. Despite the fact that Alabama came back in that game, fans were leaving in droves in that game when Ole Miss was up by, I want to say they were up by, I believe, 3 touchdowns at one point. Then Alabama kind of came back and made it close. They were leaving in droves, not because they didn't think Alabama could come back, that's a given, but because Alabama had played such a terrible football game that they did not feel they were even capable of getting their act together and coming back and winning that game. And then when Alabama was making it interesting, those fans were, wishing they hadn't left. But this was not a game in which it was just nip and tuck between two good SEC teams, and they're each giving each other their best shot, and this is just one that's going to come down to the wire, and this is the way it is. This is football at its best. No, 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 no. This was a 6-point win by Ole Miss, but it was a lot more than that. At one point, Ole Miss went up 43-24 with 10 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, and that's when people started heading to the exits. So I kept going. As Alabama was getting better and better, the thought process is, okay, the committee's going to have to do something with this loss. They can't just ignore it because they dismantled Georgia, and then they beat up on Arkansas, and then they took down Texas A&M and College Station, and then they squeaked by Tennessee. They have to acknowledge that this loss took place. How do they do that? They did it by saying, despite the loss, this is still the best team, one of the best teams in college football, gave them a 3 ranking, which now makes them look like a genius after what they did against LSU. Look, I'm not a big LSU. Here's my problem with LSU, and it's been like this for years. I get concerned with LSU when if you stop their run, they have a very hard time throwing the ball. Now, Brandon Harris did throw a very nice ball in this game, but for the most part, he had a 128 in the air. That's it. That's a typical LSU type of offense, right? Since the days of when Jamarcus Russell was twirling it around, that's about it. I can't remember the other guy after him that was really sick. Even Zach Mettenberger, for the most part. Alabama was better on the defensive side of the ball. Here's an interesting stat for you in that game. 11 of the 19 carries by Leonard Fournette. 11. Of the 19 carries, Fournette was hit either at the line of scrimmage or behind the line of scrimmage. He wasn't getting any help from an O-line, and that's usually one of LSU's big strengths. Alabama took apart this LSU team. So what does that mean for the rankings? Well, we had a number of other wins and another of other scenarios that played itself out in this. TCU took a seat. In its place sits Oklahoma State. A worthy successor to the Horned Frogs? I guess we'll see. Notre Dame is now at 8-1. Their only loss to Clemson. That's unbeaten at 9-0. Naysayers may not like Clemson for a lot of reasons, but after they beat Florida State, you better calm that down because Clemson's going to play for a national title. I got to look at Clemson's schedule here because it looks like it's a cakewalk now the rest of the way. They've got Syracuse, Wake Forest, and South Carolina, and then the SEC title game, which looks like it'll be against North Carolina. North Carolina could be tough, but the rest of the way in, this is a piece of cake for Clemson. So if all things hold true, Clemson is going to be number one going into the final championship weekend. My question is, if they lose the ACC title game to North Carolina, do they get the benefit of that one loss like all these other teams are getting a benefit with their one loss? Or is it just going to go back to the same old thing that we've done before, which is, what have you done for me lately? And if you lose on the final day, you're screwed. Michigan State is 8-1. People want to bury their chances. Do you bury their chances? Michigan State?
Is it this weekend?
It's a tough loss. Nebraska stinks. They still have to play Ohio State and Penn State.
No, they play Ohio State in 2 weeks.
2 weeks. They still play Penn State at the end of the year.
At the end of the year.
They play Maryland.
I mean, they have to beat Ohio State to to do anything. And
okay, what if they beat Ohio State and play in the Big Ten championship? Winning the Big Ten championship with one loss, even if it's to a lousy Nebraska team, is still good enough to get you into consideration, is it not?
Yeah, I mean,
gotta be, right?
It has to be.
Otherwise, what are you saying to the Big Ten? That you have to go undefeated in that conference or you can't be considered? Or if you're going to lose in that conference but still win the championship, that loss better carry some weight?
I mean, if Michigan State runs out the table and wins the Big Ten championship, their one loss will be to Nebraska, like we said, and they'll have wins over Michigan, who's ranked in the top 15, Ohio State, who's in the top 5, and presumably Iowa, who will be somewhere in that 5 range, 6-7 range.
And would you give them the early win against Oregon when we kind of loved Oregon at that time?
Yeah, see, I'm someone that looks back and I don't like giving teams the wins back when Oregon was ranked. Like they are still the same team they are now. It's not like they were a better team then. We just didn't know. So I'm not someone that looked back like, oh yeah, they beat number whatever Oregon was.
No,
at the
time. I'm with you. That's
so,
listen.
No, the Oregon win to me means nothing.
I hate to say this because I am now being proven right. I could not stand any of the people that were giving SEC teams credit for beating Texas A&M. I didn't think Texas A&M was a superior team to be bragging about that you were beating. Same thing with Georgia. When Alabama dismantled Georgia, Georgia got exposed. Florida is hanging its hat on a Georgia loss, on a win over Georgia, when Georgia was a shell of itself. Changing quarterbacks and no Nick Chubb. It's one of their marquee wins on their schedule. I'm with you. Just because a team is ranked when you play them, they might be playing with fool's gold. We might later find out that they weren't as good as we all thought, especially early in the season.
I mean, does Alabama lose any luster because Ole Miss lost again? That's
gotta be.
That's where it gets hairy because you know you got to look at these. And one nice thing we have, you know, Baylor and Oklahoma State, they'll sort themselves out because they play each other. They each play the other TCU and Oklahoma. Those games are all coming up. So they should play each other. You know, that'll figure each other out. Notre Dame and Stanford play each other. That'll get figured out because they both should be undefeated, or not undefeated, but run the table up until that point. And they'll both be, I think, 10-1 when they meet.
I was very disappointed in Memphis.
Yeah, that kind of.
I really hung my hat on a potential undefeated Memphis team that laid an egg to Navy. And Navy's a good football team. They are now ranked. That's why Memphis is not out of the top 25 and still there at 8-1. But still, really? Oh, man, I was ready to see the American Athletic Conference, Memphis, with that win over Ole Miss, sitting pretty and hanging around the college football playoff committee's thorn in their side. Can you imagine the committee having to decide on Notre Dame and Memphis and what the hell they were going to do with that? And now they don't have to worry about that anymore because there's no other team, correct me if I'm wrong, there's no other team in the American Athletic Conference that even if they went undefeated, I think Houston, that still carries a significant schedule, that carries a significant non-conference game that gives them that kind of street cred. Right, because the reason why I was high on Memphis is because they had the win over Ole Miss. So if they ran the table in their own conference, they would have beaten some ranked teams, but they still had the Ole Miss win team. Houston is a very good team and could beat Memphis, who's ranked. But other than that, their non-conference opponents are Louisville and Vanderbilt.
Right.
That's just that doesn't carry the same weight. Houston is very good.
The situation we talked about earlier, I think during one of the breaks, is what happens if Ohio State beats Michigan State and then Michigan beats Ohio State, goes to the Big Ten championship and wins?
What do you do with that?
Beats a top 10 Iowa team. Do you put I think 11-2, 10-2 Michigan team in? Because if you're looking at the games, you're looking at, you know, this is where the committee being human, do they look at the Michigan State game, I mean, do they punish Michigan for just a botched punt? Because who's going to be
they
a top 10
not.
Team.
I think the commit. Well, it, last year, they made this point on a number of occasions. Look, it's not results-oriented with us, meaning we don't just look at the final score. How did you get to the final score? right? If you lose a game on a big old Hail Mary that you dominated all the way through in a tough game, but a ball gets tipped around, yeah, they don't hold it against you as much as if the team beat you by seven by taking the last possession 7 minutes and 92 yards, scoring on a 2 yard touchdown plunge. That they were supposed to separate those kind of losses. Taking a loss and saying, yeah, but what did the loss look like?
Mm-hmm.
That's why I kept thinking to myself, what is the committee going to do with the Alabama loss to Ole Miss? This was a 5-turnover mess for the Crimson Tide.
And now what if Bama goes to the SEC championship against Florida and loses by a field goal?
First of all, my house would be, I wouldn't be able to live in it. All right. I would have to leave my home because my wife would then say that, you know, the whole house would be, I would hear all day long. I would hear, ba, 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 na, na. It would just play in a loop just over and over again. In our house, we have one of those like intercom systems where you can like call up to the kid's room by pressing a button in the kitchen. And one of the things that you can put in is a CD and it can play around the house. And she would just have that on a loop throughout the entire house. Gator fight song if they beat Alabama. First of all, so that would be really tough. Second of all, you can't put a two-loss Alabama team, no matter what you think of them, no matter how high you think of them. I don't think you could put a two-loss Alabama team in this thing.
Can you imagine if, say, Bama wins out. They win the SEC championship over Florida. What if that Michigan thing happens? They put Michigan in over a one-loss Ohio State and a one-loss LSU. Because LSU is going to be sitting there with one loss against maybe the top team in the country.
Do you remember what I told you last week? I said the SEC officials are sitting there and they know how this plays out and they're rooting for Alabama.
Yes.
Give Alabama. First of all, LSU didn't look all that good.
No, that kind of probably made them a little mad.
But if LSU had just been decent,
yeah,
and still lost, this is a scenario that plays so well for the SEC because it is the scenario that is most likely to happen. Look, Alabama should run the table and cream Florida in the SEC title game. And Alabama's next three games are Mississippi State at Starkville, tough place to play, Charleston Southern in Auburn.
Gotta love that Charleston Southern game.
Yeah, exactly. They shouldn't even play it. Just write the check and tell them to go home. Right? LSU has a tougher road to hoe. LSU, I think, still has
Ole Miss,
which is still a beast. Arkansas, which nobody wants to play Arkansas because they'll convert a 4th-and-25 on a crazy lateral to Alex Collins. Then they still got to play Texas A&M, who I may not respect, but are still dangerous. But that's the scenario that's likely to play out. Alabama runs the table, wins the SEC. LSU runs the table, sits with one loss, waiting for other teams to screw up. This is getting good.
And I'm interested that Big 12, if they all, you know, if Baylor and Oklahoma State, you know, whoever wins that game, if they're sitting with one loss, you know, because they lose to TCU or OU. I mean, what happens then? I really think the lack of their Big 12 championship game hurts them again.
I haven't looked it over. I haven't done all the different types of scenarios for the Big 12, but I'm really hoping three teams have one loss when it's all said and done.
Yeah, I'd have to look and see
It may work out that way, and I'm talking Baylor, TCU, and Oklahoma State. It could still work out that way if TCU beats Baylor, all the teams run the table, and let's say Oklahoma, because there could be four, because Oklahoma could beat Oklahoma State. There could be four one-loss teams in the Big 12. Ah! Oh, these scenarios are fun, are they not? 800-777-2907, or hit us up on Twitter, at Tony D Radio. Oh, boy. It was just one of those weekends I was getting a headache. I was watching the Alabama-LSU game going, oh, my God, there's 100 things going on right now that I can't stop thinking about when it comes to this college football playoff. I wouldn't want to be on the committee, yet I do want to be on the committee, just to hear how people are straightening all this out. 800-777-2907 on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
This guy's on. Back to him. Back to the Quick and Loud Studios. And back to Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, Yahoo Sports Radio. We take you through the night tonight on a football Sunday, not Monday. Oh, what a weekend. By the way, I saw the new James Bond movie over the weekend. I thought it was pretty good. Not great. And I here's the deal. When people say that they think you automatically hate it, I didn't hate it. It's just the expectation. I had a higher expectation for it. It didn't quite meet the expectation. It was still very entertaining, but it wasn't as good as some other previous entities. So I it was like a B minus at the worst, probably B overall. Christoph Waltz is in it. He's pretty good, but but as the villain, he could have done so much more. One reviewer said you don't bring in Christoph Waltz to be a villain and then don't use him properly. You got to use him properly. But it was pretty good. If you like that, if you like the Bond movie, I would definitely, you're going to go see it anyway. Cause if you're a Bond fan, you're going to go see it cause it's part of the whole thing. But, just don't have your expectations all that high. But this is the thing that kills me about movies, man. It kills me. Cause I went to go see this on Friday afternoon and the movie started at 1:45. All right. So I was running a little late. And I get there, I park the car, and I get in line, and it's like 1:42, and there's a line of matinee goers on that Monday. And I'm like, oh, you know, God. And I'm looking at the time, and I'm waiting to get to the line. I look at the time, it's 1:45. I get up there, I go, yeah, cool. Can I have one for Spectre, please? And they're like, okay, sure. Do you want popcorn or drink? Nah, all right, maybe I'll take a small popcorn. Okay, they give me small popcorn. All right, you got to get it out, got to ring it up. Yeah, I give them the money. I'm looking at the watch. It's 1:46, it's 1:47, it's 1:48. I get my ticket. I got to walk all the way down to the theater. It's 1:50. I go run. I kind of start jogging. And I sit down and I realize, wait a minute, I'm in previews. The movie didn't start for a half an hour after the initial start time. The movie didn't start till 2:15. I was panicking over the fact that I might have missed a minute or two of some movie that's coming out in the summer of 2016. I didn't miss the Star Wars trailer, though. That I didn't miss. So nice to see the Star Wars trailer where you have no idea what's going on.
No.
Can't wait till that movie comes out.
Just Christmas Day or the day before?
Something around there. Sometimes around there. But, and by the way, the matinee for the James Bond, the 1:45 Friday afternoon show, I was the youngest person in the theater. Everyone was old. It was like a senior citizen day at the theater. I was like, oh God, the old people love James Bond. And I'm not giving anything away. There was a scene where the villain thought Bond had died, and of course he escaped. It always happens in every movie. And the old people were cheering. I mean, cheering in the movie theater. When he comes out, he goes, ba-da-bum, ba-da-bum, and then he's shooting the gun. Old people around me were all cheering and happy.
You should have yelled at them to be quiet like they would yell at like young kids.
Oh, there was one couple that was sitting next to me during the whole previews. She would say something like this. She'd go, well, I don't think I'm going to go see that, in that voice, in that tone, in that loudness. And I almost leaned over and go, ma'am, shut up. I don't know how to say it any other way. Keep quiet. But it was fun. I like going to the movies by myself. I have no problems with it whatsoever. So I had a good time.
Yeah, I don't see why people do.
Like, I love it.
You're not going to go talk to anybody anyway, so what's the difference?
Listen, I love my wife to death. She's my best friend, and I mean this with all respect. So you know that I'm going to say something probably that she would kill me for. Whenever I open, by the way, that's a new thing. Anytime I open up with that, you know I'm probably going to say something. My wife has the worst taste in movies and makes me uncomfortable if I take her to a movie that I think she'll like and she hates. She never just goes, you know what? I don't care. I'm with the love of my life, my husband. It's 2 hours cuddling in a movie theater. If she hates the movie, she'll give me looks the whole way. Like, you really thought I dragged me to this pile of manure that I have to sit through for 2 hours? So for me to go to a movie by myself and just do nothing but relax and be at peace and be at my own, hey, I either hate this or I love this, but I don't have to answer for it, is a blessing. True blessing, because normally I get the look like, oh, this date night is ending quicker than you know. Thanks for this lousy movie. Yahoo Sports Radio.